Killian, how you doing today, my man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jake.
Great to have you. There's a ton to talk about. I mean, you cover so many different interesting things that, from my view, like working with the Aqua integration, you guys are combining different layers, I think is really interesting. You've made a really seamless experience that's easy to use, which I think is really nice. So I think we'll cover a lot of different topics. And we'll kind of dance around and see where this goes. But first, for people that don't know about you, could you give us a little bit of background of your background and like how'd you end up building on Bitcoin?
So my story, how I got into Bitcoin in the first place, indeed, is a rather unusual one, I guess, because I started working in Bitcoin before I got into Bitcoin. So it was 2015, late 2015, back in China, where I was in the automotive sector, like all Germans, basically, right? So, and ended up meeting Samson Map, who somehow convinced me to show up in the BTC China offices a couple of days later and just, check out what they're doing. And fast forward 3 days later, I was working for them and I was sitting there in BTC China offices working on a mobile wallet, and I had no clue what Bitcoin was or how things were functioning. And that's how I got into Bitcoin. So it was really Samson convincing me that this is a good idea. And it took me like, couple of months, 6 months, maybe half a year to really for Bitcoin to click on me. But once I got it, I was like, wow. And I'm sitting, back then, 2016, China was like the place to be with regards to Bitcoin. We had a huge mining pool, like a third of the hash rate was with BTC China, which I also managed a little bit. So I had the mobile wallet and did also a little bit of product management for the mining pool. So I really had the chance to see things from the inside, from the very, very beginning, which was great. And now, fast forward 2024, I got into the topic of atomic swaps on the way, I would say. So interim step, actually, the technology of atomic swaps excited me. It was Charlie D, I think, who did the first cross-chain atomic swap between Litecoin and Bitcoin back in the day, something like 2017. And somehow this hooked me. It's like, okay, I'm working in an exchange, BTC China, but somehow this technology sounds to me like you might need exchanges anymore in the future. And that's how it up. And eventually Bulls evolved as a product. Was a hobby project, I would say. It's already running since 2019. Many people might not know that. It's actually, we're running one of the oldest and longest running, and also one of the biggest Lightning nodes on the network. So it has quite a bit of a history, but it has been a hobby in maintenance mode project all these years. And we only really took it on full time and converted it into something professional, even if a entity now and stuff, in early 2023. So since a year, basically, it's for me personally full time with other guys, and yeah, here we are.
Cool.
What did I miss?
I mean, you opened a can, like I take notes and I'll open, worms, like can of worms as they go. But I'm actually I'm curious because like I'm a class of 2021 Bitcoiner, so I came in, this most recent cycle. So I'm always trying to like check like there's so much I don't know about like old culture that I want to like who was relevant back then, is quiet on Twitter now, like these kind of things. Since you've been here since 2015, I'm curious, what do you think of the current like culture or like discourse? Ordinals has changed things. People are fighting about sandwiches. Like, what's your view of like the Bitcoin culture now versus like when you got here?
Honestly, it sounds insane, but it's quieter now than it was back then. So things were even more crazy back then in a different way, totally different way. So civil war, if that's a thing, if that rings a bell for you, Samson especially was in the middle of it all. He was one of the toxic fighters on Twitter. Eventually on Sacred Activation, a lot of forks. There was Roger Ver was relevant back then. The Bitcoin Cash fork was happening. Then slowly also the Bitcoin Satoshi's vision thing was happening. There were back in China also, there was Bitcoin Gold was a bigger thing for a while. Litecoin was there, like it's one of now it still exists, but Litecoin was much more present back then. So Charlie Lee as a person was important. And his brother Bobby Lee was running BTC China, so we actually got to see Charlie a couple of times, you know. Different people, yeah. The old guard, I would say. Who else? Charlie Schramm. I got introduced to them. So were all people you could actually easily meet back then. Let me think what other names pop up. That's basically it. I mean, Coinbase started being relevant. Yeah, you saw that, but we were a little bit in our China bubble. So exchange-wise, the landscape was very, very different. You had basically the three biggest exchanges were OKCoin, not OKX. OKCoin was it called back then, Huobi, and BTC China. And then there was the rest of the world, you know? It's like that's how the hierarchy was back then. I don't really remember. I even saw a CC as it was still an engineer or later on CTO at OKCoin back, you know, like Binance didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Binance only came up later. That was the thing. But secret activation was basically in the fork, the Bitcoin Cash fork. This was
got it. And so you're saying, so you think it was, I mean, I guess, yeah, but with the soft fork wars, like I imagine it was very contentious and heated.
Yes.
So it's kind of like, it's not as bad now, even with all the stuff we're doing, than there, but not even close.
I don't think so, no. Bitcoin is in a much stronger position now. It's the user base is just, I don't know, 10x, 20, nobody really knows, but like so much larger than what it was back then. There are layers now, there's Lightning now, there are more and more layers evolving. So it's a totally different thing. So basically, if you want, you can ignore it, let's say. Yeah, right. So I personally, for example, I pretty much ignore the ordinals inscription space because it's just inside, it's not for me. I don't hate it, I don't have any strong feelings against it. I don't launch my own mining pool to do something against it or something like that. I just can ignore it. Back then it was not possible. Back then the fork was happening and you were actually not sure. What is Bitcoin now? Especially me being relatively, you know, young in the Bitcoin space. I had maybe like a couple of months at BTC China at that point when it was happening. And then you're listening to Samson, to Bobby, what they think. And then suddenly Jeff Karsik is there pushing out a Bitcoin Core release. And okay, we're going to run this one now. But wait. And then you look at the parameters and they themselves were struggling to decide what an exchange had to decide what this was Bitcoin and what was the fork of it. It was very exciting, but also, that's not the level what we're seeing right now.
Got it. Yeah. And it makes sense too. Like, I think one of the things I have to tell myself a lot is like, I don't have to comment on this thing. Like, not everything needs my opinion. It just let other plebs and people, you know, debate on Twitter and shit. And I can just go, you know, do investing or do my podcasting, whatever it is. Or learn Bitcoin script, and Bitcoin will be just fine. It's gonna keep on chugging along, block by block. We're all good. So probably some wisdom people need, myself included. I'm you know, patient zero on that, but it's gonna do what it's gonna do. Interesting. Okay, I want to start jumping into what you're building. You mentioned a word that I want to make sure we grok really well, which is atomic swaps.
Yeah,
and I kind of know what it means, which is like. The idea of atomicity is like a pass-fail. It happens or it doesn't. Yes. So you can guarantee that your transaction will swap as intended, or it's going to revert and you will have nothing lost.
That's it.
That's my overview. Confirm or deny.
Perfect.
Okay.
Pass.
Cool. Then with that, I'm not sure how you want to start, but this Bolt is an atomic non-custodial exchange, and you're blending multiple layers, which I think is probably one of the more interesting things you guys are doing really well, is you pretty seamlessly can go from L1 to Liquid to Lightning through one UI, and you don't really feel like you're switching chains like you currently do. Like pegging into something is a big friction point for a lot of like layer twos or side chains. So yeah, I guess the starting there, like tell me about like the impetus for deciding to start building out Bolts and how you kind of started to like end up towards what it currently looks like with non-custodial exchange that is Atomic.
Yes. Let's maybe start maybe one step back. Your definition of atomic swaps or how you explain it is perfectly correct. And I just want to add one little detail. In contrast, or what definitions of atomic swaps you find online and on many, many, pages, like exchanges have their own glossaries and stuff like they've tried to explain things. What they explain wrong in almost all cases is they say it has to be cross-chain, or it has to be on different chains. That's not true. An atomic swap is exactly what you said. You're basically atomically exchanging two different assets, but it doesn't matter where they reside. It doesn't matter what the underlying technology is. They can be anywhere. The only thing that matters is if I send you A, you have with amount X, you have to send me B with amount Y, and that is guaranteed to happen. Both transactions execute or none of them executes. That's it. So knowing that being said, we started with atomic swaps, experimenting with atomic swaps pretty early on after Charlie did his first. So this was really a little bit of a trigger to experiment with atomic swaps to solve an issue at hand that we had. So we were working on a Lightning project. I don't have to go into detail what it was. So basically, we had people with a Lightning node very, very early on in 2018. We had basically folks that needed Lightning channels or that had to get somewhere into the Lightning node or had to change the balance of a Lightning channel. And it was, or still is, complicated, right? So first there was the channel opening, but then basically you roll up to the balance that you have in a local site, and we didn't know how to move it. So basically we built Bolt as a little add-on chest to this other project that allowed us to move the Lightning pellets to the other side and get the coins on-chain back. Also then Bolts later on, we enhanced it a little bit. We had a service that is now deprecated actually, was a channel creation. So we wanted to get folks to be able to get the channel directly from the Bolts node. So they don't even have to go through the hoops to open a channel with the open channel command, have funds in their Lightning node wallet in there in order to do that. All of that, the deluxe is not needed. Basically, you send coins to an address and you get a channel back with a predetermined amount of local land and remote pellets. So that's how Bolts basically started. It was a helper for another project to function. The other project died, Bolts continued, and it's not the main thing. Happens quite often, I guess, but that's how it started out. And over the course of the years, I have to be honest, it was pretty dormant, just there, functioning, maintenance mode until early 2023. And in 2023, what changed drastically is the vision of Bolts, what Bolts wants to be. And Bolts, we want to be a bridge between different Bitcoin layers. So we want to use atomic swap technology to let people move Bitcoin from one layer to another. That is it. We could do so many more things. We could move to, other tokens and assets, and we could, make a casino out of it. That all be possible. We want to be laser focused on integrating Bitcoin layers only. That is basically the standpoint. So it is really more of a bridge. I think the technical term usually if you're using bridge if you're moving between technical layers, less than an exchange. So that's basically a little bit of the history how we started. And it turns out integrating new Bitcoin layers is actually it's a little trivial, right? So integrating, for example, Liquid, which we did back in May, in addition to the Lightning to main chain swaps that we already had all these years. This was almost a year of effort to actually get it done. We were just very fast in launching it back in May when the fee spiked. So we took the opportunity when the mempool went to like 500-600 sats per VBAT back in May. We could launch Liquid swaps, Liquid to Lightning swaps. But that was only possible because it was already like 95% ready sitting there. We just had to push it across the finish line. It was just a perfect launch story that we and that we had. So that's the main addition we did in 2023 to Bulls. Also, we have a new web app, which makes everything much smoother, much nicer, much safer as well. And what we launched like last week is another major add-on, which is also in the works since many, many months. Probably don't see if it launches, it's just there, right? But with months of work, we moved all swaps to Taproot native swaps. It uses Taproot technology under the hood to execute atomic swaps, which makes it, in simple words, more efficient, more private, but also makes the swaps themselves more reliable. And that is, for me, as a little bit of the guy looking at the, that's a nice product. It enables something we call immediate refunds or immediate cooperative refunds.
Yeah,
so swaps, basically nothing's perfect, right? So a swap can fail. And then I think you said it in explanation. You have to get your coins back somehow. And in certain scenarios, you have to actively claim them back. And so far, you needed to wait for that. So the traditional atomic swap protocol actually has a wait time, a time lock included. So you would sit there for one day, best case, worst case, 4 days, waiting to be able to claim your coins back that are still stuck in this swap. And with Taproot swaps, we could eliminate this wait time. So if Bulls cooperates with the user, they can sign a keypad spend, that's how it's called, and then they can refund immediately. It's just such a nice UX improvement, because if your swap already, you know, it went wrong, that's already bad enough, then having to sit there for a couple of days waiting until you can get your money back, this is, for a lot of users, they can't understand this, right? So they come from, we have a lot of users coming from exchanges now, like users that have no idea about the technology, there's no idea about it works. So it's really difficult to explain to them, we're not stealing your money, we're not holding it back, it is, we cannot control it, you actually have to wait, it's part of the atomic swap technology. So the Taproot swap upgrade was a huge UX bump, so that now basically our swaps behave as you would expect them to be. And so, yeah,
got it. Okay. The bridge for every layer is a super fascinating base foundation to build from. Yes. So we'll definitely cover that more. I'm curious though. I've dabbled with submarine swaps a little bit. I tried to like grok what the idea is, which is like, it's kind of like an atomic swap, but you pass a piece of information through some other medium, like a website or something, some kind of like image or something or a QR code, and that passes some other piece of data. Could be wrong partially on that, but I'm curious, like, I guess the first question is like, is atomic swap, is it better than a submarine swap? But was submarine swap kind of like relevant at the time because it was like a bleeding edge of the tech, and now most chains can be atomic, we can like deprecate submarine swaps, or am I way off base on that?
It's a definition thing. A submarine swap is nothing worse, not better or worse. It's a subcategory of atomic swaps. That's what it is, right? So you have the more generic term is atomic swaps, and subcategory submarine swaps means there's lightning involved somehow. The term, I think, was coined by either Alex Bosworth. He was one of the first guys experimenting with it back in 2018. I think it was Alex Bosworth, he just came up, what was Lado, maybe he came up with the name. So really subcategory, just meaning at least it actually defines like one part is chain, the other one is lightning, then it's called a submarine swap. But the underlying principle is exactly one-to-one the same than a regular submarine swap between two chains.
Okay, so how it works... just want to make sure, is for definitions, is lightning the thing or is off-chain the thing, or does it really matter?
I would say lightning. I've never seen it, the term being used in any other context. If you say submarine swap, you're swapping in and out of lightning from some sort of chain. Maybe you could also swap from something that is not technically not a chain and still call a submarine swap, but it doesn't exist yet, so nobody decided yet how to use the...
Got it. Okay. No, that's super helpful. Then I'm like curious because like I've used some bridges and a lot of them will have an escrow kind of function, typically smart contract mediated in the middle. And so that's like, it's not fully atomic because you have to wait for that, you know, authorization to go through to complete the other half of the bridge.
Most bridges, I think the ones you have in mind are, they actually are loaded with customer funds, right? So that's why all these hacks that we are seeing in the news of some sort of bridge and wormhole, I don't know what, like most EVM chain ecosystems is happening, is because customer funds are actually sitting in the chain. So the basic concept how it works, you transfer your, I don't know, ETH in there, and they give you another token on the other chain, but it's actually your coins are in there. That's not the case with us at all. Money goes in, money goes out. That's it. There's never money sitting around at Bolts that could potentially be stolen, apart from our money sitting there. But customer funds go in and they go out immediately in the process of
swap. Got it. So I guess, yeah, that's what I'm wondering is why. I'm trying to figure out initially why is that a thing? Is it because they're doing different token swaps? Because building something atomically and making these chains talk in this way seems exponentially better on all accounts.
More complicated.
So is it a complexity issue where it's like you can build faster, go to market quicker if you do it that way, and just the trust assumptions are known-ish until you get hacked. But the tech exists to do this, like to go from chain to chain, and to go from what token A to token B if you want to. It's you got to bang your head against the wall more to build it correctly.
Yeah, that does matter.
Got it.
It is. I mean, the basic principles are easy to build an HTLC to replicate the function of an HTLC, which is the core of an atomic swap. How it works is easily possible via a contract on an EVM chain, but to do it securely and to have it really battle tested and make sure nothing can go wrong. That's the hard part, I guess.
Yeah. Got it. That was actually my next question, because like the chain you've chosen currently are like probably the most closest to Bitcoin, if you will. Liquid, L1, and then Lightning has kind of been the darling of like Bitcoin developers for the past 3 years. So like, does complexity increase as you go to EVM or a ZK rollup thing or stacks, or like does it get harder the more they abstract the language or different the language as you're building?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, the advantage you have on Bitcoin, on UTXO, let's call them UTXO chains, like Bitcoin and Liquid, very, very similar, Liquid is a fork in the end, is that you have the core functionality of atomic swaps already built in. The HTLCs, they're just already there. You can just use them. Whereas on an EVM chain, you need to write it yourself, but it's perfectly possible to do so. Actually, we did. So I can reveal this is already halfway public anyways, that our next integration that we will be doing is with Rootstock. So Rootstock is an EVM sidechain of Bitcoin. And basically what we had to do there is to replicate the functionality there in smart contracts. It's done, it's possible. We're still, what is, you know, time intensive is security reviews. Also, if one little thing changes, the contract has to change. So basically, upgradability of the contract. You have to make sure that you can upgrade to new contracts if there's need be. So it's really building the infrastructure, building it out that there's no unforeseen situations anymore. With Bitcoin, basically, you don't take care of any of that because it's just there. You just use it. Use a couple of opcodes. That's it. Right. So that's in the end. The code is it looks easier even on the EVM side, but to set it all up, that you don't need, I don't know, proxy contract pattern in order to upgrade the contract later, that's the tough part. And also what we were struggling with Rootstock, and that is actually still not solved, and the reason why we didn't launch yet, is you need RBTC, the Bitcoin on Rootstock, in order to swap into Rootstock. I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense for new users. They want to go via Lightning, for in our case, want to go via Lightning in, because they don't have RBTC yet, or we expect a lot of users to be new users that don't have any RBTC yet. So that was another problem we had to solve. You don't have that issue on Bitcoin. It's all solvable, it's all doable, but you need a lot of infrastructure around to make it happen.
Got it. Okay. That's actually really cool to hear. Especially because like once you build that once, everyone's doing an EVM chain to try and like attract ETH dev. So it's like you build it once and you can quickly move to wherever gets traction next.
Yes.
And be on all the relevant chains. So that's super exciting. Cool. Curious about Aqua made a splash recently.
Nice one.
Yeah, like that. And it was nice because like I have a thesis that wallets are a big friction point for people because they're so ecosystem dependent. Like it's hard to find one that supports, you know, more than two or three networks at any given time. They kind of pick their thesis, and so, you know, Xverse is like Ordinals and L1 and Stacks, and MetaMask will do Rootstock and whatever. And so it's hard to find like a perfect one where your BTC can just float from every chain. You can like plug into a DeFi application. So Aqua is really nice to use because I like the abstraction of like the savings account, which is like slow ass L1 BTC, and then layer two, which is abstracted. And that was the first kind of like big step. I was like, oh, that's what the future will look like. You just float between chains and don't know if you're on Liquid or Lightning or Rootstock because they all peg the same. It doesn't matter. So I'm just curious about that integration, especially because you guys are powering so much of the back end invisibly and making a lot of that functionality possible. So I'm curious about like that how they approached you guys and like what's that process been of like integrating the wallet in parallel out of how that wallet works.
Well, as Samson is behind Chain 3. He knew that we launched Liquid Swaps. So basically, he had his eyes on us, I guess, anyways, from the beginning. He was just waiting to see if we were capable to run this in a production grade manner. Seems like we're convincing. That was basically all functionality wise. It was all there. So maybe that's one thing I should mention. So Bolts has an API. That is not there's nothing unusual for a regular exchange. Every exchange has an API, but it has a non-authenticated API you can swap non-custodial with, and that's something new, right? So basically it's an API you don't have to and you shouldn't trust, an API you should treat as an enemy, versus in an exchange you get your auth token and you trust that the number sticky and everything is correct. That is exactly what we tried to prevent with our API. So Aqua was able to integrate with us because we have an API, and we are the only non-custodial swap service that has an API, as far as I know. Maybe there's a new one by now, but I don't think so. So the integration itself is always less smooth, even though we have API docs like everyone else. There's a lot of more work required on the client side, like on Aqua. So Aqua actually has to do a lot of crypto magic locally in order to verify responses. Or even sometimes we don't give the response. And that's something really cool. I just had it today again, another integration. It's like, but why don't you just give me the value? It's like, because you shouldn't trust it, right? So if I give you the value and I give you a wrong value, for example, a wrong address, and you let the user send money to that wrong address, then that poof, it might be gone, you do not. So you need to compute the address yourself. It's like, okay, that makes sense. So that's a lot of gotchas during the implementation process that developers are usually not used to. But the Aqua team was very, very professional. It was very quick, actually, and things worked out pretty well. But it is not something you do on in an afternoon. It's a couple of months of effort to integrate the API in its entirety, test it all properly, make all the... We have a separate, I think I called it Don't Trust Verify doc in our API docs, where you do additional computation to double check, is the Lightning invoice with the correct amount? Or is the redeem script really what it's supposed to... Where you use the redeem script to compute an address. And is it really this address? I have to decode the Lightning invoice myself locally to actually find out if the amount is correct. I shouldn't have this. There's a lot of gotchas and additional work to be are to be done. So the integration is work. It's basically you have a couple of weeks at least. You're working together as a team in order to get the integration done.
Got it. I want to double click on the not. Yeah, you said non-authenticated, non-custodial API.
Yeah.
And you know, for the non-devs, you know, an API is this kind of like thing. It's like a basic way you could query some kind of data. And it's packaged in some kind of format, and then you can display it in some way. And it sounds like you guys are doing something where is the wallet doing some of the validation? So it's kind of like client side, like what RGB is trying to do for all the things, which doing a very small subset of that. So you get just enough data to ask for something, and then enough on the client side to make sure that, you know, that atomic swap's going to happen. But that sounds like a bit, I feel like you're underplaying this. It sounds like a big innovation.
It is largely a big pain in the ass to get people to understand it and actually do it correctly. Joking aside, I think it is a big innovation. Because it is the first time that you're actually you're treating an API source as the enemy, i.e. the best case, right? So you're basically you're constantly verifying. So client side validation, yeah. So there's a lot of client side validation involved. There's probably even still stuff that we can improve that's not in our docs yet. What clients also should validate. But basically every single piece of data they're getting from us, they need to double check.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things they need to compute by themselves. For example, on the atomic swap, on a even deeper technical level, how this atomicity works is basically always the client, Agua in that case, is generating a secret. And the secret exists only in the wallet, in the Agua wallet, for the duration of the swap. And it needs to be safeguarded. And the client cannot release it to us before, you know, the client's able to claim the coins that belongs to them. If there was something wrong and this secret got leaked somewhere, that'd be pretty bad, right? So this is all stuff that the client, they have to take care by themselves and to release it in the correct moment, or compute the hash in the correct moment to make sure I'm even able to unlock the atomic swap in the end. So that's... There's a lot of burden is on the client on the client side with a non-custodial API.
Got it. That's super interesting. It sounds like what people really don't know, like the way a typical API work is you ask for something and you get something in response. So you say like, is the sky blue? And they'll go, no, it's green. And you go, well, it's blue. So you're saying like, you can do something on your local device that can confirm, yeah, it's blue. And then you cryptographically do some magic, whether it's your account or your secret or whatever, the amounts match, and then everything is all good to go, and you can proceed. That's super interesting. It sounds like that should be a standard going forward for a lot of, you know, either DeFi or stuff like that. But if you're blazing trails, like, you kind of have to get it from here out into the world, or people are not going to, like, know what the heck's going on, right? Like, there's an education gap there.
Yes. I mean, that's part of my mission and now to start educating about, you know, a little bit of the innovation or the potential that the underlying technology has. But in the last year, we were so laser focused on growth, adoption, you know, like we need to increase volume, also getting our numbers in order, accounting, you know, like we had so many things to focus. We're a very small team. So, but now this year, it's my personal vendetta to get the message out and explain to the world how Bolz works under the hood, in order for people to grasp, right? So, for example, we are going to Bitcoin Plus, organized by Nifty, crowdfunding developer. Well, she's on the sabbatical now, but she's organizing these developer conferences. So we're going there, doing a workshop, and starting to educate developers, right? So if developers get it, it might end up in other projects. If it ends up in other projects, people asking questions, how does it work? Why is it? How do you claim it's non-custodial? And then they start, you know, that's a little bit our strategy to get as many integrations done as possible, because not only it's good for us, but also it's, you know, it sets a precedent. It's getting things out there, and people, even a CEO with another, you know, project at some point will want to understand how it actually works.
Yep, very nice. And yeah, I'll also show. I'll be in the Austin Beach C++ as well. I went last year, and it's probably the single highest conference for like alpha that you could go to. It's just like all the best builders are going to be there. So get your ass to Austin if you can, and I'll be looking forward to your workshop. Cool. We covered so much already. I only have a couple more questions. One I'm curious about is I've been thinking about, so watching how Liquid and Lightning are kind of like playing nice, and part of it's because you guys abstract away a bunch of complexity. But I'm wondering if there's a lot of hubbub right now about Lightning not scaling and L1 fees are going to kill it and all these different things. Is there a world where L2s solve other L2s problems? Like Liquid could solve most of L2's Lightning scaling problems or another L2, and they kind of become purpose-built for opening and closing channels and like managing state and these kind of things. Am I off base on that, or could that technically be built if people, you know, built it the right way?
Definitely. It was basically our launch story. So the blog post that I wrote for launching Liquid Swaps, that was basically the point of it, saying we did not Liquid Swaps for the purpose of Liquid or doing anything or getting anyone on Liquid. I was frankly new to Liquid back then as well. Now I know much more, but back then it's like, yeah, Liquid exists. It has functions. I don't know what. We built it to solve an issue of Lightning, to help Lightning for node operators to be able to rebalance channels independent from the main chain mempool pool. So basically, no matter what the fees on the main chain are, you should be non-custodially able to rebalance your channels and thus keep the Lightning network functioning. Because, I mean, let me tell you, we operate a very big node. We do thousands of payments every day. You clearly notice the reliability of the Lightning network is going down when main chain fees are high. Because at least for the less professional operators, they then just don't do any rebalancing, or they do it less frequent. So channels are more imbalanced, and things are just working not that well, right? So it's noticeable. Yeah, it's not something that the people make up in their heads. It's a real world problem. So how we see people currently using Liquid swaps between Lightning and the Liquid sidechain is basically they have either already Liquid ready there that then they can go into Lightning, or the other way around, which is very, very popular because you get inbound liquidity like that. That's how it's called when you send out Lightning. It's a very important function for Lightning node operators. They swap into Liquid and then they hold with Liquid for a while until they go back to the main chain. Like this, they circumvent totally the main chain fees issue. So there's no, basically, the main chain footprint should be as small as possible. That's the idea. So, and ideally, you can time it when the fees are low. So that is the entire of the idea of our Liquid swaps, and that's how we launched. Right now, there are much more use cases now. Many more use cases on people doing things with Liquid swaps that we have could never imagine that they will do, but they came up with so much stuff. But the main thing is and always will be rebalancing channels for Lightning. And I can also announce today that we will be launching a dedicated product for that. So we will be launching Daemon that is purpose-built for channel rebalancing of Lightning nodes. Right now, you can already do that. It's perfectly possible via the web app. You go to Pulse Exchange and you punch in the amounts and you send from your Lightning node. But we want to optimize that, right? So it should be automated, completely unattended, ideally, and it should be using Liquid. And that's what we're working on.
Very cool. I need to get like a bullhorn for like when an alpha drop just comes out.
Yes.
So do you think, I'm curious then, because like there's a lot of talk about channel factories and LN symmetry and like opcode changes for the L1. Do you think that's, you should push for it because the more robust you can make the L1 for like L2s, the better. But it sounds like the L2s are actually way more suited to solve these problems when it comes to like rebalancing in mass, that the L1 is going to always be like infinitely harder. So do you think that a lot of that effort is misguided and they should be building up a layer kind of like you guys are already doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. if you can improve things on the main chain, you should do it. What I think is misguided right now, and I think Adam Back, Proximo also something they said it basically. If you have a proposal how to change the main chain with some covenants opcode, why not try on Liquid first, right? So that's a little bit the thing that I think is a little bit misguided. Folks are pushing directly to the main chain because, and the use cases are always, these are usually technical or researchers. The use cases they have, they're very technical, right? So it's might not be, in my personal opinion, the use case, the everyday Lightning node runners, Lightning wallet users, plebs that just, you know, pay stuff with their mobile Lightning wallets. They will not directly benefit from that. So why not build the use cases on another layer first, right? And once the use case is there, then you might also see, okay, actually, this use case is that expensive or that, you know, the chain footprint is that large, it will never work in the main chain, not in that fee environment. So that's one danger I see. That I think not many are really looking at that. But yeah, that being said, it's always good to improve the main chain. Covenants are something that we are like really looking forward from both perspective to see on the main chain as well, because it enables a bunch of cool things. Honestly, I am not very well versed in the 3 gazillion different proposals that are out there right now. Which opcode is the best and how to activate it? Honestly, I can't really tell you. But some sort of covenant would be really, really nice because we're actually using them or we're about to use them. Was merged a couple of hours ago. We are using covenants on the Liquid sidechain to improve our swaps, actually. So we could do the same with the Machin swaps. That would be good, right? And it could be used for so much more. So we see the use case for that. Is it a pressing thing for everyday users?
I tend to agree. Like seeing Arc build their, you know, proof of concept on Liquid is kind of a similar thing where it's like it might as well go, especially as Bitcoin matures, like the burden should be higher and higher for an upgrade before you kind of cross the chasm. And so, you know, putting it on a functional L2, even though you might not love the trust assumptions, like, you know, spend the time, build it right, do it there, prove that it works or that it can get some early users.
The use case, exactly. Prove that the use case works, that the use case is there. Because if the use case is there, it doesn't matter if it's built on Liquid or on another sidechain. And if you can't prove that the use case is there, you got to rethink, even though it's a very nicely designed BIP and the code's all there. And it's like, okay, if people don't want vaults, for example, or nobody's really doing vaults large scale, I don't know, you know, like you need to prove the use case or somehow. That's where I'm from.
Yep. No, I totally agree. Cool, man. Well, I got no other questions besides anything that I missed that we didn't discuss that you want to, you know, discuss here?
Yeah. So the word that I wanted to get out in the end is basically non-custodial, self-custodial is the future. It's the only way forward. I really don't see any alternative on... there is regulation coming up on both sides of the Atlantic, I think, at least some politicians proposed. And in Europe, MiCA's coming. It's pretty bad regulation, I have to be honest. I'm furious about it. I'm pretty sad about it. But you got to accept the reality. It's coming. I think it has to be enforced by member states until 2026. And it basically puts everyone in the category of being a crypto asset service provider, and you need to, you know, KYC, chain analysis, AML, all that stuff. So far, non-custody, according to the interpretation of a couple of lawyers I spoke to, is still out. So it's still outside of that. But honestly, I'm even fairly sure that they will get that and they will put it in. But then... the only way you are safe and that nobody can touch and confiscate and freeze your coins is if you have custody. So this is this one red line that never can be crossed, in my opinion, is offering a service that is custodial from here on out. It will be, it's just, I don't know even how to call it, but I couldn't sleep at night if I was running this service, and I couldn't sleep at night if I was a user of the service. So yeah, bad things will happen. It's just set up for bad things to happen, if I may put it like
that. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I will say, like, you know, talking to so many startup founders, some of them are like, don't give a shit about regulation. They just like, we're going to send it and it's going to lay where it lays. But if you want to protect yourself, like, the best way is, as you said, like, build non-custodial first. You could go to some, you know, obscure regulatory environment and just hide your entity there. But, like, ultimately, if you don't cold funds, you're pretty much absolved of most of that responsibility. I said I had no more questions, but because you said that, I have one more follow-up, which is that most people, when they talk about non-custodial and user experience, there's a tension there of, like, building something easy to use, and non-custodial is default hard, thus custodial will always gravitate to a certain subset of people because it just feels easier. And so I'm curious, like, do you have any pushback on that? Do you think the tools would get good enough that, like, that will become not relevant in the future?
I mean, we're certainly trying. So we are serving by now a surprisingly large amount of what we can tell. I mean, we don't do any tracking, we don't really know, but the customer support interaction we have, that's where we really get in touch with users. Those are users, they have no idea even what non-custodial or custodial is, right? So they just use our service because they don't want to go from A to B. It was recommended to them. Everyone says safe, so they use it. Right. They don't even know this non-custody thing is happening in the background. They don't know their website that they're loading in the browser is actually managing keys for them. It's actually managing the secret of the atomic swap and making sure bots can't take things that is not authorized, you know? We are getting there, I have to say. I'm pretty confident we can get to a level that might... Actually, vice versa. Now that you make me think about it, I think custodial services will be much more complicated in the future because of KYC, because of the freezing, because of all of that. So in order to get an account on a custodial platform right now, it's a process of, you know, selfie, blah, 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 all that stuff. And it's not even talking about the privacy implications, any of that, or the time that I need and how complicated it is to even get my account opened and operational is so much more complicated than going to bolts.exchange, type in a number and say swap.
Yep.
Right.
That's a great bar. That's a great bar. If you're going to pull out your driver's license, you're doing something wrong. Like, if you want to mine Bitcoin, how you feel about Ocean is up to you, but look at how you use it. You just point your ASIC at this thing, and it's immediately tracking everything else you need to. There's nothing else it's doing. Like, default, three steps, and you're already mining, and they don't got your picture, your address, all that stuff. So that's a pretty good barometer for, like, is this built properly? Does it ask me for any kind of KYC? If, run.
Yeah. So I think by now we can safely assume the UX for the end user will be better with non-custodial services. If you have a wallet, you might still need to somehow secure your 12 words, but that's as hard as it gets. Everything else will be easier, and especially you won't have problems down the line. And I think this education slowly ripples down with users, and they know, and they just know that there won't be any problems down the line, and that's what they value.
Yep, that makes perfect sense. I love that. Okay, well, man, I got nothing else to add. Super thankful for you coming on. We covered a ton. Super excited about what you guys are building and this new daemon release to manage channels. Anything you want to show, or any kind of like links you want to call out? That's a good
We're searching for beta testers, or alpha testers for the daemon. If you're interested in, if you're basically a Lightning Node runner and you're doing channel rebalancing, or you plan on doing channel rebalancing and you are thinking, that could be automated because I'm always doing the same thing, I'd love for you to join our beta and to test it out. Basically go, how can you get in there? Go to bolts.exchange. There is a Discord button. Click on the Discord and it will open our Discord. And there is a channel. For the daemon beta. It's called Bolts Client. I'd love to get some more folks to join us and actually help us improve it a bit. It's already functioning, it's safe, it's just, you know, improving the UX. That's what it is about.
Perfect. All right. And I'll have links down below in the description for anybody who want to make it easy on you. Kind of type in anything, I'll take you straight there. But man, Killian, thank you so much. It's been fantastic, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin. I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting. I've been waiting now, I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out, cause I'm